Andrew, and hello, Inga's Nation. You're listening to episode 19 of the CrossFit Inga's podcast, and today we will be talking about sleep.
That's right, and we have a guest on the podcast.
Very special guest.
Our resident sleep expert, Kate Perpich.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome back.
Why, thanks for having me.
Feels so official. All right, but before that, we're going to get into a few general updates.
Yes.
First being the
hours. Holiday hours coming up. So with Christmas approaching, on the 24th, Christmas Eve, we will have three class times, the 7 a.m., a 9 a.m., and an 11 o'clock, which we will be doing the 12 days of Christmas.
Which is a really fun workout. Super for anyone fun. Who hasn't done it. It's kind of like the song, the 12 days of Christmas, but each element, I guess, in the song is a different movement, and you do the workout exactly the same way you sing the song.
So, how do you sing the song?
On the first day of Christmas, so on and so forth. But the best part is the 12 is the 12 ounces of beer,
yeah.
And then you go back through the rest of the workout to finish up.
Or 12 wall walks.
It's the only workout which involves drinking a can of beer.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
All right, so then the 25th, we're closed.
Yep.
And the 26th?
We will be opened. We'll have shorter hours, 9 o'clock and 11 o'clock, so just like the weekend, basically. Yep. Then we have the 31st, same thing, 9 and 11. We'll be closed on the 1st, New Year's Day, and then we'll be back to regular hours on the 2nd.
Yep.
Perfect. And move class, we will not have move class until the 2nd, so.
Which is a Wednesday.
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect.
Cool.
Let's talk about sleep.
I love sleep.
Who doesn't? So I guess before we get started, Kate, you have a lot of knowledge in this area. Why do you know so much about sleep?
Well, it's a favorite subject of mine. I'm not sure if I love many activities as much as I love sleep. But no, in my AP psychology class, we spend a whole 2 or 3 weeks just diving into sleep, why we sleep, how we sleep, all of those good things, good sleep hygiene, which is so important. And so I've been able to kind of just expand my knowledge that way.
And we figured it would be a good conversation to bring here because it's so important to, exercise, recovery, nutrition, all that kind of stuff.
It really is the foundation from which everything else kind of goes. We talk all the time about exercise and nutrition, but sleep is equally, if not perhaps even more important.
Awesome. So we wanted to start with a study that you brought to us on sleep positions and how that relates to our personality.
Yeah, so it's kind of just a little fun pop psychology type thing, but they did a study with 1,000 people, and they tried to correlate your sleep position, the position you sleep in most often, along with your personality. So the study found that the 6 most common sleep positions are fetal, so lying on your side, knees up to your chest, hands by your side, log, laying on your side with your arms straight down, yearner, lying on your side with your arms stretched out. Soldier, lying on your back with your arms flat by your side. Free faller, those who lie on their stomachs. And starfish, that would be me. So laying on your back with your arms flailed over your head. So let's see, Renee, why don't you go first? Which one sounds most like you?
I'm definitely a fetal position sleeper.
Perfect.
Yeah. So what does that mean about her personality?
So actually, fetal is the most common sleep position, and it was determined that 41% of the population sleeps in this position. Huh. Fetal sleepers were described as being tough on the outside, but sensitive at heart. Shy, perhaps, initially, but quick to relax.
Do you find that suits me?
I think so. Yeah. I think it's pretty close.
I can appreciate that.
Very good.
So I'm definitely, I would say, soldier on my back with my hands at my sides.
I think that's totally true.
Yeah.
So soldiers make up about 8% of the population. They tend to be quiet and reserved. Sounds about right. And don't like to make a fuss. They set high standards for themselves and others.
Well, that's definitely true.
That's very accurate.
This is perhaps why we call you dad.
So you're which one now?
So I'm a starfish, 5% of the population. So I sleep on my back with my arms above my head. They make good friends because they're often ready to listen, offer help, and are unassuming. They are happiest out of the spotlight.
Nice. I think that sounds accurate.
Yeah, I think these match up pretty well.
We'll see. Little bit of truth to perhaps all of them.
All right. So I think a good place to kind of start the conversation is like how much sleep we need. I mean, I think that's probably the most common question, right? How much? Although maybe some of the other questions should be a little more important. But what does the research say, or like what's the thought around how much sleep we should get?
So how much sleep we need really depends a lot on our age. Younger kids, teenagers, they need upwards of 8 to 10 hours of sleep. For the average adult, we're going to look for somewhere between 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night, which we've seen more recently, most Americans are getting actually closer to 6.5 hours of sleep. So for the average American, the average adult, we're looking at 7 to 9 hours a night.
I'm probably in that 6.5 to 7 range.
That is not enough sleep.
How many hours do you get?
About eight consistently, yeah. I really like to get sleep, and I make it a priority.
Now, what if I feel like I can function on less sleep?
Well, and I think a lot of people feel that way, but the research just basically shows that there are these cumulative effects of not getting enough sleep on a regular basis. And so in this Western age or this new age, we kind of have the ability to use caffeine and artificial light to kind of make up for the fact that we are sleep deprived, but our bodies are showing that there are detrimental effects to not getting enough sleep. So some people would think it would be nice, I'm sure, to just get rid of all sleep altogether, but
whew, that would be challenging.
But it affects so many things that I think we underestimate how much and how important sleep really is.
Yeah. Let me just take a sip of my coffee before
I was actually going to point that out as you were saying that. There's a Starbucks that he literally did just take a sip of.
Okay, so that's the quantity piece. Oftentimes, like when we talk about nutrition, we talk about the quantity and the quality. So what about quality of sleep?
So there are different stages of sleep, right? So basically, when you fall asleep, you go through a progression of light sleep into deep sleep, and then later into the night into REM sleep. So we get most of our deep sleep, which is that like really good, my alarm clock won't wake me up, the kids are crying but I can't hear them kind of sleep, right? Where if we wake up out of that sleep, we're often groggy. And that's the sleep that's really good for physical restoration. So if you've had like a really physically taxing day, we find that people who have had that kind of day actually get into and spend more time in that deep sleep. And we know that people are in deep sleep because looking at EEGs, we find these slow rolling delta waves where brain activity has pretty much slowed down. Now, interestingly, it's also the stage we are most likely to sleepwalk in. Have either of you ever sleepwalked?
I don't think so.
I don't think I have. My brother has.
My sister used to also.
Yeah.
So it's actually more common in boys than in girls, but about 20% of the population will sleepwalk or sleep talk at some point in their lives. And there's this misnomer, right, that if you wake up somebody who's sleepwalking, it's bad for them or dangerous.
Is that true?
No. It's okay. Absolutely not true. You can wake up your sleepwalkers. It's just really hard because it's that really, really deep sleep. But in addition to having physical recovery, we find that this is where we are having cognitive recovery as well. So we're like reinforcing those memories that are made during that deep sleep.
Interesting.
So when you go to deep sleep before REM sleep.
Right. So basically, it looks a little bit like a ladder. So we go stage 1, 2, 3, and 4 are deep sleep. Then we actually go back to 3, back to 2, and into that REM sleep. Because what we find on the EEGs is that when you are in REM sleep, your brain is completely active. We see these high frequency, low amplitude beta waves. So that's why our dreams and our nightmares are so vivid. Your brain is just as active during REM sleep as if you were completely awake and excited.
So do you only dream in REM sleep?
90% of our dreams are in REM sleep. But here's the thing. Your body is relaxed to the point of paralysis. So we will actually never sleepwalk. We will never act out our dreams because our body is completely paralyzed. And it's actually in this REM sleep that we see a lot of our muscular recovery take place as well, because we're releasing the hormone, the human growth hormone, and we're beginning to release testosterone and things that help to kind of rebuild and repair that muscle.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere that you only, your body only produces HGH at two times. One is after exercise and the other is in while you're sleeping.
Yeah.
Which is huge, right? Because like HGH, like that's, it's a banned substance, right? For performance reasons, you know, in sports and stuff. So I guess that, you know, just shows how important that part of sleep is.
Yeah. I mean, I think in general, we underestimate how important recovery is. So the idea is after we work out, we're releasing that human growth hormone. So it's the best time in terms of nutrition to be eating protein, right? So that it just floods the muscle. The same is actually true at night. So if we wanted to talk nutrition there a bit, like the idea of having some slow release protein, like casein or a lean protein, or even some protein with some carbs before you go to bed. It's the idea that during that REM sleep, the human growth hormone is released. Your muscles can be flooded or continue accessing that those proteins, those amino acids. And so rather than your body actually breaking down muscle while you sleep, your body will actually build muscle while it sleeps. And that's where muscle is really built, in that recovery piece. So if you're somebody who's especially trying to gain lean muscle mass, one of the most important things you can do is make sure that you are getting upwards of 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night.
So talking about the eating, you know, before you go to bed, a lot of times that's, you hear that, like, you know, you don't want to eat right before bed. Is that a bit of a misnomer, particularly for people who are looking to gain, build muscle and, you know, in that sense?
So there are a couple of things at play there. So we don't want to eat really big, necessarily heavy meals right before we go to bed because we are in this sedentary state. But what we find are a couple of things. One, that by eating protein, our muscles will absorb that protein while we sleep. And so again, our muscles will use that protein to build muscle in like an anabolic state as opposed to breaking down muscle like in a catabolic state. And then the other thing that we find is that when we exercise or we've had a stressful day, we release a hormone called cortisol, and our body is in this like fight or flight response. And what we find is that we, if we have carbs, it helps reduce the insulin and it helps reduce that cortisol and can actually help us fall asleep and stay asleep faster. So I think the idea of having good clean carbs, having good lean protein, and maybe even some healthy fats is not a bad idea. Do we want to be having a, you know, big juicy steak right before we go to bed? Probably not. But going to bed on an empty stomach isn't a good idea either.
So what you're saying is
do you have a concoction?
My yogurt with protein powder is a good idea.
I guess. I guess maybe I am. But you're not hungry.
Chris has that same pre-bed snack as well.
Yeah, that's his go-to.
Yeah.
See? Makes sense.
Yeah. He puts some peanut butter in his.
Some things we don't want to be having right before bed, though, are caffeine. If we can limit to caffeine to prior to 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, that's, yeah.
That's ideal.
That's a tough one for me.
We're currently past that hour, and there's still a coffee on the table.
And it lingers. Even if you don't realize that, it lingers in your system. And it affects not just the quantity of sleep, but how quickly you fall asleep, and then also the quality of your sleep. The other big one, and this is going to be hugely unpopular, is alcohol. And this I do think is a bit of a misnomer, right? Because people think if I have a nightcap, if I have a drink, it's going to what? Like,
it'll help you go to sleep, right?
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And I won't argue that you're not asleep after you've had a few drinks because you're definitely unconscious. But you're not in that natural rhythm of sleep. And so even though you're sedated, what we find is that people who've had alcohol in their system, they're waking up many, many, many times every single night. They're not getting that deep sleep. They're not getting REM sleep. And so their sleep is fragmented. And though they're not waking up to a conscious waking level where they realize it, the next morning they feel as if they've only had a couple of hours of sleep, even if they've been lying in bed for 8+ hours. So alcohol, just like in terms of nutrition, slows down your process and, you know, whatever towards your goals, it's going to do the same in terms of your sleep.
Yeah, I can definitely attest to that. I mean, even nowadays, even if I've had like one or two drinks, the next morning I do not feel as rested.
Yeah.
So that definitely hits home for me.
And most people don't realize that they're waking up, like I said, multiple times every night. Like, you think that you've slept, but in reality, you've woken up. And you haven't gotten that good REM dream sleep where you're going to release that human growth hormone.
So you talked a little bit about, you know, sleep and how it relates to recovery. What are some of the other important factors that we should be considering here? Because obviously that's a huge component, right? Particularly for people in the gym who are doing strenuous exercise, breaking down muscle. Because my guess is that the majority of the recovery occurs while we're sleeping. So what are some things that people should be considering?
Well, so sleep honestly affects every organ, every tissue, every cell in our body, and that's why it's so important. So when we ask ourselves questions like, why do we sleep? It's more like, what does sleep not affect, right? So if we don't get enough sleep, maybe we'll talk in terms of not getting enough. What we see is an increased level of cortisol, which is like that stress hormone that we release. And humans are the only species on Earth that sleep deprive themselves, right? Like bears and dogs and cats, like they don't sleep deprive themselves. And so our biology recognizes that lack of sleep as a stressor. So, and not in a good way. And so with those heightened levels of cortisol, we then in turn become more insulin resistant. And when we become insulin resistant, there are some other things that happen, right? So our body begins to store more fat. Right? And so if you're trying to lose weight and you're exercising and you're eating well, the problem is if you're not getting enough sleep, 70% of the weight you are losing is going to be lean muscle mass. Right? So you're essentially undoing so much of the good work that you're doing when you're awake. Not only that, but when you are not getting enough sleep, you are less likely to exercise. You are, your time to physical exhaustion, meaning the time in which you get tired during a workout or a WOD, decreases by 30%. Your speed, your muscular strength, the rate at which you respire or breathe in oxygen or out carbon dioxide, all of those decrease. You accumulate lactic acid much more quickly. Your ability even to perspire is affected. And one of the biggest is perhaps the rate at which we see injuries is a very high positive correlation, meaning that as one goes up, the other goes up, between rate of injury and negative correlation between rate of injury going up and the number of hours you're getting of sleep going down. So it's just the whole kit and caboodle, honestly.
Mm-hmm. So that's essentially saying that, like, as you get less sleep, you're more likely to get injured. And also huge for people who are trying to lose weight, right? Like, if you're trying to lose weight and you're not sleeping enough, all the other stuff you could be doing, even if you're putting in the work in the gym and also have your nutrition on point, if you're not sleeping well, you're kind of setting yourself behind the eight ball.
That's absolutely right. So when we don't get enough sleep, there are a couple of things that happen in our brain too. We increase a hormone called ghrelin, and ghrelin basically makes us hungry. It says, brain, it's time to eat. And then you secrete another hormone called leptin, which if you're not sleeping enough, is that feeling of satiety or feeling of fullness, which essentially goes down. So people who aren't sleeping enough, people who are sleep deprived, are people who are producing too much ghrelin, not enough leptin. They're hungry more often. And here's what we also see. Their hunger are specifically for foods that are high in fat and high in carbs. So not only are we hungrier, but now we're craving more of these fatty, high-carb foods. And in addition, the frontal lobe, the part of our brain that allows us to make good decisions and have self-control, well, that's not working properly either. So we become more susceptible to giving in to all of those indulgences.
You kind of have everything working against
you. Yeah. You're kind of like fighting a losing battle, in all honesty. But the beauty is the opposite is also true. Right? So if we are getting enough sleep, it's easier to have self-control. If we're getting enough sleep, we're producing leptin that makes us feel full. And we're closing the window in which we would eat. So if I'm awake for 16 hours, right, versus being awake for, say, 20 hours, right, chances are in that 20 hours, I'm more likely to eat more.
That makes complete sense.
They did a really interesting study where they actually took a healthy group of young individuals, completely healthy. They had exercised. They were eating properly. They had regular amounts of sleep. They deprived them of sleep in terms of just giving them 4 hours for 6 days in a row. And at the end of those 6 days, every single one of them showed signs of pre-diabetes, type 2 pre-diabetic.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
What we see is that people who are sleep deprived in adults have 55% of them have an increased rate of obesity and type 2 diabetes. The correlation is just positive and outstanding.
It's huge.
Yeah, we've talked about like the pyramid of fitness and how like nutrition is at the bottom. Mm-hmm. Really, it should be sleep at the bottom, right? From the sounds of all this.
Yeah, nutrition is the base, and nutrition or sleep is the base, and nutrition and fitness or exercise are kind of the pillars in which it stands. But really, without that sleep and recovery, then all we are doing is stressing our body out in every which way, right? So if we're eating at a caloric deficit, our body registers that as a stress. If we are not sleeping enough, our body registers it as a stress. And while exercise is so good for us, if we are exercising but not allowing recovery, our body just reads it as another biological stress, which is why exercise is great, but we want to make sure that we're also not exercising within an hour or two of trying to fall asleep or go to bed.
Yeah.
We want to bring those cortisol levels down. We want to find relaxation.
So with all that said, what are some ways that we can improve that sleep hygiene?
So I guess the first and foremost, like the biggest thing, and this is going to be super unpopular, but go to bed and get up at approximately the same time every day. And Saturday and Sunday are days.
Yeah. I think I'm pretty close to that. I mean, just having kids has sort of negated sleeping in on the weekends.
That is
so
true.
So we are pretty, I mean, I definitely get up earlier during the week, but Saturday and Sunday, like, not sleeping in.
Yeah.
So
people like to think of sleep like a bank. Like if you create this debt or this deficit, oh, I'll catch up on Saturday and Sunday. But it doesn't work like that. Your body doesn't register it like that. So you'll never be able to pay it back, right? So once sleep is gone, it's gone. So while it's great to get 8 hours on Saturday and Sunday, you haven't made up for the fact that you were getting 5 or 6 Monday through Friday. And here's the crazy thing, right? Like if we set a sleep routine, right? Our body is set on this circadian rhythm. So your body will begin naturally fatiguing at the same time every night. Your body will begin naturally waking up without an alarm clock and without a snooze at the same time every morning. And so what we do, unfortunately, is we work Monday through Friday so hard setting that circadian rhythm, and then we throw it all away on Saturday and Sunday. That's why it's easier to get up on Friday than it is on Monday, because you took the whole thing and you threw it right out the window.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because through Monday through Friday, I will set my alarm, and I typically will wake up with that, and then I shut it off for Saturday and Sunday, but I am still waking up at that same time right around like before my alarm would have gone off.
And that's a really good sign of somebody who is getting enough sleep. Andrew?
I think I get plenty of sleep. I feel great.
Good. And while there is some discrepancy about exactly how much each person needs in terms of sleep, the research just shows that people who think that they need less sleep, everybody needs 7 plus hours of sleep, even if you don't think you do. Now, some people need 8 or 9, but anything less than 7, you're really kind of doing yourself a disservice.
No, I'm sure that I would benefit from getting some additional sleep, for sure.
So that would be the one big one. The other big one is save your bed for sleeping. We need to stop doing all the other activities that we do in our bed, in our bedroom, and save that place for a place of calmness and relaxation and sleep. So that means no watching TV in bed, no being on your phone in bed, no being on your computer in bed, not reading in bed. And here's the tricky part, right? Like, people think, oh, I read to fall asleep. And yes, we've made that association. That's some classical conditioning there, right? But it's also the same reason that you fall asleep at your desk when you're reading. And if you train your body to be active and reading and thinking and analyzing while you're in bed, then it becomes harder to fall asleep and the quality of sleep is interrupted. So the other really big one is to make sure that you are dimming the lights, that you've got a good bedtime routine, that you are removing all technological devices from your gaze at least 30 minutes before bedtime. Something better would maybe be something like a warm shower, because our body also signals or looks for signals of cooling. So if we take a warm shower and we bring all that blood to our skin and our extremities, then when we go to bed, our core temperature is cooler, and that also signals our body that it's time to rest and fall asleep.
Yeah, I've definitely gotten in the habit of doing that, you know, particularly because I'm usually working out in the evening. Mm-hmm. And so pretty almost every night I like have a shower before bed, and that definitely like calms me down and helps
me.
Sets
the tone.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, our body looks for darkness, because when our rooms are really, really dark, which is what we want, right? Think evolution, right? Until Edison, we didn't have a light bulb. So when it got dark, our brains would secrete a hormone called melatonin, and then we would go to sleep. And then when it's dark out, it's colder. So our body also looks for that drop in core temperature as another sign that it's time to go to sleep. So all of these things, we don't want to fight nature. We want to embrace it because it's there for a reason.
What about naps?
So naps are tricky, right? So again, sleep is not like a bank. So it's not like the total amount of minutes, right? Like, you can't just like 5 minutes here and 10 minutes there and like 20 minutes here and there. So in general, the whole day, our bodies are building up this fatigue so that when we go to bed, we're tired. Mm-hmm. So if you're somebody who enjoys naps and you take naps, but then you go to bed and you're not tired, again, you start doing yourself a disservice. But research has shown that after naps, we can be more productive. So if you are somebody who can and enjoys to regularly nap, and has no problem falling asleep at night, then naps are not a problem. That said, we want to keep our naps to that 20 to 30 minutes, because I don't know if you've ever realized, but if you've ever taken a nap and napped for maybe 45 or 60 minutes, you've probably gotten again into that deep sleep, that slow wave sleep. And so when you wake up, you're extra groggy and you feel less refreshed versus that 20-minute power nap.
I think I've heard, and this obviously based on what you just said is probably not true, but I've heard before that, oh, it's not worth it to have a nap unless you can sleep for 3 hours or more.
So when we sleep, an entire sleep cycle takes 90 minutes, right? So the idea is we go 1, 2, 3, 4, 3, 2, 1, REM. It takes 90 minutes. In the beginning of the night, right, we spend more time in that stage 4. As the night goes on, it's still a 90-minute cycle, but we spend more and more and more time in REM sleep. So the idea is, if you're going to take a nap, right, you want to wake up in REM or before you get to that deep sleep. So either 20 minutes gets you before deep sleep, or if you have 90 minutes, come see me. I've got some things for you to do. You can take them off my plate. But no, but 90 minutes would be better, because you get into that REM cycle, you finish a full cycle, and again, you wake up feeling refreshed, which is really the goal.
What about like sleep apps or these fitness trackers? How do they play into this? or how do they help or show us how we're sleeping?
So we've got Whoop, we've got Fitbits, Apple has something now. I don't actually have one, but essentially all of what we know in terms of like what stage of sleep you're in is based on your heart rate, it's based on your body core temperature, and it's based on your brain waves. So all of these apps are kind of essentially doing the same thing. They're marking, you know, what stage of sleep you're in, how long you're in that stage of sleep. And most of them, what they're doing is looking for that deep sleep and they're looking for that REM sleep, because those are the two that in terms of quality have the most restorative properties, mm-hmm. both physiologically and cognitively.
So tying it back to those who in particular are really focusing on their nutrition and exercise, trying to see if they are reaching that state of REM sleep, this would be beneficial to them.
Absolutely. And they can see that maybe they were in bed for 8 hours, but maybe they weren't getting good quality sleep. A couple of things that I would look at first, like, are you in a super quiet room? Mm-hmm. Are you in a super dark room? They recommend that your bedroom be somewhere between 65 and 67 degrees. So a bit cooler. Refrain from drinking alcohol. Refrain from sleep aids. What we find is that sleep aids, so like Tylenol PM and things mm-hmm. like that, again, they're just sedatives, right? So yes, technically you're asleep, but it's none of that quality sleep that you get naturally. So you're better off taking like a melatonin or, you know, supplement or something like that, or magnesium, a little bit better than, you know, the prescriptive sedatives, which aren't helping you. They're more hurting you.
Yeah. I think, so there's a ton of really good information here. If you were to sort of kind of summarize things and like wrap it up, what would you say, what would be the take home message for everyone?
I think there's this stigma out there that if you sleep 8 hours, you're lazy. You're not using as much of the day as you possibly could. Or simply that, oh, I only need 5 hours of sleep. I only need 6 hours of sleep. And you wear it like this badge of honor or almost this sign that I am healthy. But I think the big takeaway is that this is in fact a fallacy, mm-hmm. that it's not true, that lack of sleep has been correlated with everything from diabetes to cancer to Alzheimer's to stroke, heart disease. That we need to change the way that we think about sleep, that we need to be more educated in sleep and see it as this necessity and priority and not just this thing that we can easily do when we're dead. Because unfortunately, we've seen a shorter lifespan for those who don't get enough sleep.
So what you're saying is people who say, I'll sleep when I'm dead, is probably...
It'll come much faster. It's going to come much faster. And the quality of your life leading up to that is going to be less.
Yeah.
Because people are more emotional when they don't get enough sleep, and they're cranky, and they're just no fun to be around.
Yeah.
100%.
So the takeaway is, get enough sleep.
Yeah. Well, and most of the people who are probably listening to this or like coming to the gym, like they're trying to maximize their potential, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's in fitness or in their day-to-day lives. So just hammering home that sleep is such a huge important part of that.
Yeah.
The foundation.
And really it's about wellness, right? This mm-hmm. whole concept is about wellness. So fitness, nutrition, sleep.
Cool. I think that's a perfect place to wrap up.
Great.
Thanks, Kate.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. And we will be back in a few weeks or a couple weeks for another episode of the CrossFitting Guys podcast.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.